yourself someday.
Hello, world. Welcome to Living to Write, where we talk with notable writers about their methods, careers, and advice for other writers. I'm Brian Landwehr, and I am a writer. If you are too, or you'd like to be, you're in the right place. With me each episode is my good friend Bailey Patterson, who is also a writer when he isn't busy producing this fine podcast. Hello over there, Bailey.
Hello, Brian. Hello, listeners.
So, Bailey, I do trust your taste in movies quite a bit, mm-hmm. but when you turned me on to the movie Pig not all that long ago, I didn't imagine, honestly, that it quite live up to everything you had to say about it. And I absolutely didn't imagine we'd be getting to spend time with the writer and director of that weird, wonderful movie. But that's exactly what you've arranged for everyone today.
That's right. Yes, I'm very excited about today's episode. Our guest today is Michael Cernowski. He is the brilliant writer behind his original movie. He was the writer-director of Pig. But most recently, Michael is the writer-director of the newest installment in the Quiet Place franchise, Quiet Place Day One, set in New York.
And it's Follows a prequel. Prequel, right?
It's a prequel. Yes, it's a prequel. And I'm very interested to find out what it's like for someone like Michael, who has this very distinct, unique voice, like you see in Pig, something so original, to be invited to a universe like A Quiet Place. Very interesting. So I'm really excited to talk to him about that and sort of see how he was able to get his own voice in that universe.
Yeah, I'm excited about that, too. And I think you'll remember that we had a lot of fun with our introduction for Mick Garris in the previous episode. But I'm kind of thinking we might maybe possibly have gone on just a little long with it. So I'm thinking, Let's maybe keep this one short and sweet. And plus, I'm just anxious to get Michael in here. Can you live with maybe like fewer hijinks in our intro this time, Bailey? Does that work for you?
Yeah, I kind of was like a kid in a candy store that day when Mick was arriving. Not that I'm not going to be like that for Michael, but I'll tone it down.
All right. That works. I'll do the same. And let's get him in here. Dear listeners.
Wait, Brian. We have to whisper because the monsters can hear you.
Dear listeners, I now give you Michael Cernowski.
Lights, camera, action.
Hello.
Michael.
Hey, Michael.
How's it going?
Very well, thanks. Good to get a chance to meet you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you giving us a little bit of your time today and coming to talk with us a bit about writing and your process and your relationship with the industry and whatever the heck you want to talk about.
Sure. That sounds great. No, I'm happy to be here. I'm on vacation for the first time in 2.5 years. So
congrats.
A little bit of free time.
Congrats.
Where are you about?
I'm in the Galapagos. I'm on a boat right now.
Oh wow. Very nice.
Yep. Hopefully my internet holds up.
I detect satellite internet, so.
Yeah, although they said it's better when we're near like a town right now. I tried to plan it for the day when we'd be near one of the island towns, so.
Oh.
Hopefully, so far, so good.
Well, I'm tripling down on thanking you for giving us some of your time then, because you're obviously a very busy guy, and I'm very impressed with the work of yours that I've seen so far.
Thank you.
In our introduction, we explained a little bit to our listeners about who you are. Well, maybe not who you are, but what you've done in the industry. I'd like to ask you what you are. and by that, I mean, are you a writer who directs? Are you a director who still writes?
Yeah, I mean, I think position in the industry wise, I think I'm a writer, director. I feel like I'm perceived maybe more as a director, but I don't know. So far, I've written everything I direct. I direct everything I write. I think as far as how I perceive myself, I feel like a writer who's very engaged with editing and uses directing as a way to sort of connect those two pieces of filmmaking. So it's hard to kind of like separate that stuff for me, because when I'm writing, I'm thinking about how the movie's going to be cut together. And then when I'm directing, I'm thinking about how to get the script in a place so that I can get all the pieces that I need to be able to cut those things together. So I see them all as sort of feeding into the same thing. And at the end of the day, I sort of see them all servicing editing in some way.
Oh, that makes sense to me. And that's really exciting that you are involved in every stage of the life cycle of the movie. the first time it's made in writing it, the second time it's made in shooting it, the third time it's made in editing it, and you're holding its hand all the way along.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing it any other way. I mean, I know there are a lot of directors who don't write their stuff, but I don't know. I mean, I think if I weren't writing my own thing, I would have to really study that script and really understand exactly what I'm trying to achieve on that in that way. And I just find the writing process where I start laying those bricks for how I'm going to structure this thing and how I'm going to approach it artistically, how I'm going to approach it at the end of the day in the edit. And if I didn't get to like do that phase of writing, that would, I don't know how I would approach it. It would be very difficult for me to kind of get deep enough into the material to feel comfortable with what I have to do as a director and in the edit.
So do you imagine yourself ever potentially directing another writer's material? And I'm talking about a screenplay that you did not participate in at all.
I mean, it would be hard for me to imagine that. I think, I mean, if I read a screenplay and I was like, wow, this sounds like my voice, like this sounds like I could have written this, then sure. But I can't imagine that ever quite happening. I mean, I guess it could, and I could stumble upon something that's just like, geez, like this feels like something I could have written, and it feels like it comes from my soul. Yes, but I think so far from what I've seen, that doesn't happen too much. So it would be hard for me to direct something that I had no involvement in writing. Like if I found a script that I liked and I wanted to kind of do a pass on it to kind of put it into my own words and feel it out, that would be a different thing. But just straight up kind of taking someone else's script and directing it, I don't know. I don't know if I could ever feel close enough to the project in the way that I need to kind of bring myself to it.
That makes a lot of sense to me, what you said about doubting that you could find something that was particularly in your voice, because I mean, everybody has their own voice, but you have a very specific voice. And I'm thinking mostly of the movie Pig, which we'll get to in a moment here, because I do have some questions for you there. When did your interest in storytelling begin? How did you get from being a kid to being a writer?
Slowly. I mean, actually, like getting to the point where I felt like, oh, I'm writing as a profession took a really long time. I mean, I think my interest in storytelling, like most people, began at a very young age. I mean, I loved my mom used to read me books before going to bed, and I loved drawing maps of the worlds that she was reading to me about. My dad used to read comics to me before I went to bed. So, you know, I loved reading, I loved comics, I loved drawing, I loved writing. You know, I would write short stories growing up. I don't know if I ever really thought that like writing was going to be a career. I mean, I think I knew that it was something I wanted to pursue, and I knew that storytelling was something I wanted to pursue. I just don't think I understood, as like a little kid growing up in Wisconsin, how that could possibly make sense. It seemed very fanciful. But in some ways, the fanciful side of it was what drew me to it. It wasn't practical. I didn't see how it sort of fit into the rigid things that you have otherwise in your life as a kid, like academia and all that. And so it was kind of an escape. And yeah, I think in some ways, like it being this thing that sort of exists outside of what is taught and expected of you was part of why I loved it so much. And then it just took me a really long time to figure out how to turn that into a career.
When you were growing up, were you constantly looking for screenplays to read or find, or how were you learning to sort of find your voice on the page, but also, I guess, you know, write a screenplay as well?
Yeah, I wasn't looking for a lot of screenplays. Like, I didn't really understand film as an idea until probably high school. Like, I remember the moment I learned that, like, oh, you shoot scenes from different angles and cut them together, so this stuff isn't happening at the same time. Like, I think I was in like eighth grade when I learned that. So I was definitely, you know, it's not that I led like a really sheltered childhood, but I don't know. I just went to a small school. My family, you know, we watched movies, but we didn't like talk about them a bunch, or I didn't know anyone who worked in the artistic field. Everyone in my family's in medicine. And I didn't even know to look for some of that stuff. There was like a little filmmaking class in my high school where, you know, you just had like a handy cam, and I don't even remember if we wrote scripts in that. We were cutting stuff on iMovie, and every time I learned something new about film, it felt like I was discovering something completely unknown, because I didn't even know that I was looking for it. So I don't think I ever like actively was thinking, okay, I need to study scripts and figure out how to do this. I think I just sort of that gradually sort of happened. And even in film, I mean, when I didn't see writing screenplays as like the kind of writing that I was going to do. I wrote a lot of short stories and, you know, I thought I might write a novel or write a comic book or things like that. And the idea of writing a screenplay kind of came later. Like I mean, my interest in film sort of started from an interest in special effects makeup. I really liked the idea of doing that. I thought that would be fun. And then, you know, I met some friends who wanted to make short films and I was going to help with special effects. And then everyone decided to not make whatever short film we were working on. And so I decided to write it, and I kind of stumbled into like, oh, I can use some of my storytelling and writing to write screenplays. So I don't know. It was a messy introduction to writing.
So given that you didn't run off to USC to study screenwriting specifically or something like that, do you have a formal process to get the pages done? Do you wait for the muse to call you?
Yeah, I mean, I think so far the way I go about it, well, just to sort of get to the point where I was even writing, it was I started co-writing things with friends. Like a friend would have an idea and I would say, oh, I'll help you write that. And I wrote a lot of things. I helped shoot a lot of short films that really didn't feel like me. They weren't me. But I didn't know what me was. And so I sort of needed to do some of those things and help other people with their things to realize what I didn't want to do and what sort of things did interest me. And then Pig was the second solo screenplay I ever really wrote, where it was really just, I wasn't trying to co-write it and bounce things back and forth so much. And it was really just, what do I want to tell? And so sort of step one was getting to the point where I felt comfortable, like I deserved to write something on my own and I didn't need someone else and their ideas to sort of help me. Like I could just sort of be alone in the woods there. And then my process, I think the biggest parts of my process are sort of forgiving myself for things, like giving myself the space to take time to not write, to think things over, to mess up. And from that kind of comes that I like to do a really messy vomit pass first. Like I usually start with kind of a character and a feeling that I want to achieve. And then from that, I build out the script in a very general term. Like I kind of know where it's going to go more or less, but a lot of the little waypoints along the way, I'm not sure about. I know sort of the feeling I want people to have from it. And then I'll just kind of go with my character and go through that journey with them. And then I'll end up with a really messy vomit pass that I then start to kind of structure and edit. Like I don't really think about three-act structure or anything like that before that point. I'm just kind of diving in and seeing what sorts of things I want to explore with this character and what this script wants to be. And then I'll read that vomit pass and realize, oh, like this seems to be like a thematic thing that's happening here. Maybe I should flesh that out and organize it in a way that is felt, or like, oh, this little side character that I threw in actually like rhymes really well with this other one. And like, let's bring that out. And I usually try and like keep it very raw so that I can kind of just let the script tell me what it wants to be. And then I start making outlines and charts and like arc things and all of that. And then starts the kind of editing revision process. And it's really only after that that I would say I have like even a rough draft done. Then once I've sort of been able to kind of like take the primordial soup of this thing and turn it into something a little more rigid and a little more structured, then it's like, okay, this is a readable first draft that I can start like showing to people and getting reactions. And then it's just continuing to edit it and continuing to sort of try and see what this project wants to be. I don't like trying to like force things onto a script. I like to kind of see what it wants to be, like give it as few boundaries as it can have, and then just really like see kind of where it wants to ooze into.
So it sounds like for your first draft and your first sort of pass to sort of just see if it's working and to sort of dive into the world, you sort of let your subconscious sort of guide you, as where you're not really thinking about anything too much.
Yeah. And, you know, there's always some things that you get hung up on or you have to figure out. But yeah, right. I like the first vomit pass to really feel like a discovery for me. Like, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know exactly how these characters are going to interact or what they're going to mean to each other. Like something feels right about it. And, you know, that first vomit pass, 80% of that's going to get thrown in the garbage, but you're going to find these kind of nuggets of things in there that are the movie. And yeah, that's so far, that seems to be kind of how I like to approach things. And I think the more I do it, the less wasteful those vomit passes become. Like I start to sort of, have a better sense of just intuitively of the kinds of things I want to explore. But I still try my best to like not force anything on it. Like if I find myself writing an 11-page scene and I'm not really sure what it's doing for the story, but like something feels right about it, I'll just keep going with it. And then, I'll go back and edit it or figure out why I wanted to do that so badly. And sometimes it was self-indulgent and stupid. Sometimes it's because there's something at its core there that I really want to explore, and I didn't realize that that was an important part of the story.
I'm a big, big fan of your film Pig, and
Me
I
too.
found the tone of that movie so interesting. Since you wrote it and then had a chance to direct it, I'm curious, do you see the tone of the completed film matching the tone that you were imagining as you wrote it, or when you
I
got,
think overall the tone does. I think there's always, I say like, I would say Pig based on the original script is probably 80% what I imagined. And that's sort of in a good way and a surprise. Like it's because the actors bring something that you're not expecting. The environment brings something you're not expecting. Like, but overall, yeah, that was sort of the tone that I was imagining for that. Something kind of both somber and also kind of like fairy tale-ish and weird and dark and sad, but also kind of life affirming and sweet and like all that sort of feeling was the feeling that I knew I wanted to achieve for that movie. So I think tonally it's pretty close to what I was planning.
It's interesting what you were saying about all the contrasts in the film. When I got done with it, I felt like, wow, that film was slow paced, but also really fast. And it was serene and violent. It was quiet, but it was loud. It was full of great contrast that really held my attention. And both that and the overall structure and flow of things. I did not know where that film was going, but I was never disappointed by where it went.
That's great to hear. I mean, I think part of that comes from the vomit pass thing. It's that as I'm writing it, I'm not sure where certain things are going to go. But some of it's also that I like to think about an ending that I'm not sure how to get to, but like it just, you kind of know when an ending feels right for a story. Like I don't want to force something in just because I think it's a funny idea or something, but it's like, for that movie, I remember thinking, I want this sort of movie that feels like a film noir cowboy movie that instead of ending with a shootout between three dudes, it's just a quiet dinner between three dudes. And that, like, somehow that kind of made sense to me. And I was excited by that idea. And then it was the question of, like, how does that story get to that place without doing it in a way that feels forced or inorganic? And it was the same thing with Quiet Place. It was like, I knew how I wanted the very end of the movie to be. And I knew the feeling that I wanted people to have when they see that. How do we kind of get it to that place where that feels earned and doesn't feel out of nowhere? And yeah, it works out sometimes.
Brian and I were fortunate to attend an event a few weeks ago with Paul Schrader. We're fortunate to talk to him. And he said when he was writing Taxi Driver, I don't think he actually was Travis Bickle, but he was in a dark place in his life. He was sleeping with a pistol under his pillow. It was kind of a dark area in his life. And we were talking about how he uses that taxi cab as such a great metaphor for Travis Bickle. And Brian and I were talking, you do such a great job, a similar thing in Pig with the pig, using that as grief. And it's just so profound. Everybody says the best writing comes from life experience. We're all writers. So how do you write such authentic emotional experiences and put that into your film?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to draw from some stuff you know. Like when I was a kid, my dad passed away, and I think when I was writing Pig, I was at a place in my life where I was finally becoming more aware of sort of the long-term effects of what that loss meant to me and like my family, my mom, my sister, how it has sort of shaped us as adults and the how we sort of interacted with our worlds because of it. So I think Pig very much became this study of three different people interacting with a loss in different ways, and how not just like the initial effects of grief, but how it sort of transforms your worldview and how it affects how you transform the world around you. And I think that just, yeah, came from growing up some more and becoming more aware of how those things had long-term effects in my life. It's, you know, I think people think of grief as like, oh, you're sad and this and that. And there are all these immediate effects of it. But then you don't realize that, you know, 20 years down the line, you're going to interact with every single person in your life in a different way. You're going to have a different way of perceiving society because of it. And it became sort of about that for me. And then the other thing that I like to do is, you know, I was thinking about how grief had affected me in the long term, but I wasn't 100% sure what my like thesis on that was, or I didn't have an opinion on it yet. It was just something that I was dealing with. And I like to write about things that are kind of right on the cusp of my understanding. So I have some basis for building these characters on, but then I can use the characters to kind of delve into some of the darker, more mysterious parts of my own head and start figuring some of this stuff out. And I don't think writing like has to be therapy for you, but I think it should encourage you to go into unknown territory, because if you're just writing exactly what you know and you're just trying to like preach something to your audience, I don't think it's going to feel as alive. Like, I want to feel like we're on a journey together, we're making friends together, we're exploring new worlds together. And I think if you're not doing that authentically as the writer, it's not always going to ring true for the audience.
And it felt like a very personal film too, in a way. And I don't know you obviously in that sense, but that's what I mean. You just did such a great job of exploring that grief. So thank you for that answer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So when you sat down to start on your vomit pass for Pig, how much did you know about what was going into this story? Did you know that you were going to be exploring grief, or did that come later?
That came later. I mean, initially I knew that I was going to be exploring an old man and his truffle pig, and he loved that pig for some reason, and it was going to send him on a journey to try and get that pig back. It really, like, the characters became kind of clearer, like the character of Amir's father, like they sort of popping their heads up. And, you know, I mean, you always know that you want to be putting things in a story to kind of like act as foils or to sort of like rhyme or reflect things about your main character. And so these things start sort of like popping up throughout the story. And then you gradually realize like, oh, this is a story about three men interacting with loss in a different way. Let's really like zero in on that. So I think subconsciously I knew that it was about some of that stuff. I mean, obviously it's about loss. I knew early on that I wanted the pig to be taken, and I knew what I wanted to happen at the end. So I don't want to spoil it too much for people, but like, I mean, I guess it's been out for a while. So it felt like the entire journey was on the surface almost meaningless, but you still have to sort of connect with people and go on these journeys in spite of that. I think on some level I knew that this was about grief and about how we interact with the world based on that. But some of the more specifics, I think, kind of became clear to me gradually.
Tremendous contrast, I would think, to how things got started with A Quiet Place Day One, where it wasn't simply sitting down with an idea, but there was an already established world and characters and events for you to deal with, not to mention that you're writing a prequel, so you have the responsibility of not spoiling canon and setting things up in a way that's going to be pleasant for everyone involved. How did you end up with that job, and how did it go?
So Quiet Place started with John Krasinski reached out to me. He had seen Pig and he really loved it. And he said, hey, we're making this prequel for The Quiet Place. We want to do a New York Day One invasion movie. That's sort of all we've got as far as what we need from it. Would you be like, could you bring the pig touch to this world? And what would that look like for you? And he gave me like a weekend to kind of mull it over. And initially I was like, I don't think I want to do this. Like, this, that's a lot of pressure. I think a New York invasion movie, we've kind of been there, done that. Like, it's just what new things are there to tell? Like, and whatever it is, it's going to, part of what made the first Quiet Place movie fun was that it wasn't that like in the moment apocalypse movie. It was watching this family try and survive a year and a half into it, and sort of making that Cloverfield version of this. It's just kind of like, it takes away some of what's special about those movies. And so that was my initial reaction, was I just don't see it. I don't want to do a movie about someone trying to escape or like save their kids and get out of the city, or some military interaction trying to like kill the aliens, some scientists, you know, dissecting aliens and figuring, like, I didn't want any of those things. But then it was kind of through thinking about how much I didn't want to do those things that I came to this character of Sam, who I was like, well, what if my character wasn't engaged with any of that classic stuff? What if she didn't even really want to survive? And what if she was dying at the very beginning of the movie and we took away that sort of classic survival crutch? And yeah, and then I remember I went to John that Monday and I was like, I gave a 30-second pitch that was basically, hey, I don't think this is the most marketable version of this movie, but if I were to do this, I would do a movie about a hospice patient who's dying at the beginning of the movie, and when the world ends, she just wants to go get her favorite slice of pizza. And that would be my version of this sort of thing. And, you know, I was mostly expecting them to just say fun, but like, you know, we need something a little bigger than that. But he said, heck yeah, let's do that. We kind of presented it to Paramount. They said, let's do it. And then I didn't even write. I mean, as far as the writing process goes, it was pretty similar in that, like, I don't think I really wrote like a detailed treatment. I think I wrote like a paragraph for them just to be like, hey, here's generally what I'm going to do. And then I went off to New York for a month and just kind of cranked out a vomit pass, then smoothed it out, sent it to John and his company. We talked about some ideas, made a revision, and then we sent it to Paramount. And then it was just, you know, then it, I think where the process differed was then that latter portion when it was like, okay, then now suddenly a bunch of other people have ideas of what we need out of this movie. And then my sort of job became trying to protect that core thing that I was interested in, which is sort of watching a dying person have another chance at life during the apocalypse and wanting this pizza while trying to sort of please all the various different people that had different expectations for what these movies needed, while also trying not to go down those paths too much that I had wanted to avoid from the beginning. And, you know, there's always kind of compromises to do along the way, and I definitely had to do that. And, you know, people wanted little more monsters here, and like, you know, there was a version of the script where the last 30 pages had like zero monsters. It just became a pure drama between the two characters, and the monsters were completely in the background of the whole story. And, you know, Paramount, rightfully so, for what they need from these movies, was like, we need some more monsters in there. And so, you know, you kind of figure out some of those compromises, but I think it's having that like core emotional thing that you respond to and trying to protect that, to maintain that sort of soul, even when you're kind of adding some of the more expected things to it.
You mentioned protecting the core of the movie once all the other people got involved. Did you feel that it was particularly under threat, or was it pretty well recognized and respected? Or is it hard to say because protecting it wasn't hard?
It's hard to say. I think there's so many moments along the way when, if your priorities get out of whack, you can lose the soul of a movie. Like, if you start, you know, going in one direction before you realize it, lots of things can slip away. And it's hard to like know when you're giving up too much. It's hard to know like which battles are really the ones to fight. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think the soul is still there. I couldn't point to like one moment where the soul was like saved or threatened fundamentally. It's sort of a,
Sure.
if it's gonna go, it's gonna be a death from a thousand cuts kind of thing. And so like it's, you know, I think Paramount, John, everyone, they were excited by this idea, but it's one thing to be excited by it and then another to sort of like keep pushing for it. It's complicated. It's, I think at the end of the day, everyone wants to make a special movie. Everyone has different ideas on how you go about that. And it's just having a lot of honest conversations with everyone and understanding what different people want and understanding what's expected. And yeah, I don't think there was one moment where the soul was like lost almost. It was just, you know, just constantly being aware of it and making sure that everyone's kind of as much on the same page as they can be.
So that you were able to write it in a way that respected the world and yet to come events that had already been established. How did that work? Did they hand you a document, some sort of Bible,
Yeah.
or was it a matter of you going to study the first two films, or how did that work?
It was the latter. I was half expecting like a Bible that was kind of, here are the rules for the creatures, this and that. That
Yeah.
didn't really exist. I really just went back to the first two movies, watched them, took notes on them, you know, tried to in some ways tear them apart as much as I could, be like, okay, what's the logic here? Does that match the logic here? Is there, if it doesn't, is there a way to think about that that could make it make, like, you know, okay, this thing is laid down as fact here. It's laid down as, like, I just tried to kind of keep notes on all the stakes that were in the ground and the question mark areas or the milkier areas that were uncertain. And so it was, and then if I had questions, I would reach out to Krasinski and just say, hey, what were you thinking for this? And most of the time he would just be like, I'm not going to be precious about this. Do you? And I'll let you know if something like violates something important. And we never really had that happen. So, I also, you know, I was only slightly interested in sort of the creature lore. Like, I think part of what makes those creatures fun is that you don't know a lot about them. And I think.
Agreed. Yeah.
And, you know, I think like, audiences, some people say like, oh, we want to see what did the home planet of the creatures look like? And like, what do they do? How do they do this and that? And it's like, you think you want to see that, but you just want to see like a little bit. Like you don't, you, if you take away all the mystery of them, it just becomes, it isn't what it is meant to be. It's something so primal of like this, you make a sound, you die kind of creature that just feels like a violation of something inherently human. And it, you know, you don't want to turn it into some nature documentary about every in and out of these creatures.
It brings to mind for me the, I don't remember what they called it, if it was director's cut or extended cut or whatever, of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when they followed him inside the ship. Like, everybody thought that they wanted to know more about that.
Yeah.
But then that ending was kind of a bummer. Oh, well, I didn't really learn anything, but I definitely lost some mystery. So, yeah, I didn't learn anything.
You want
actionable.
To want to know about them. That's
right.
That's
right.
The most exciting part. Knowing about them, like, you know, it's just not, that's not going to keep people coming back. That's not going to keep you invested. And it's also not how, especially on day one, it's not how the characters would be interacting with these creatures. That Sam's character has no idea what the home planet of these aliens looks like. And that would be really weird to cut away to that.
Less is more, and it's a great example here.
Yeah.
When you are deep into working, when there's a deadline to come and you've got to get these pages cranked out, does it become a matter of a regular schedule? Are you in your chair and typing at 6:30 every morning, or is it less formal than that?
It's a lot less formal. I'm a pretty fast writer so far. I mean, you know, you hit these moments where you don't write for 3 days straight because you need to research and marinate and play Zelda and like all that sort of stuff. It's important to the process.
Definitely.
But that's part of the forgiveness thing as well, is a lot of writing is not literally writing, and it's kind of getting your brain into a place where it's found excitement again or found it's in again. We did it on a pretty tight schedule. Like, I was brought on, I think I started writing February 2022, and I went out to London to start prep September that year. So, I think I turned around a first draft for the studio in like 2 months or something. And then,
wow, that's pretty snappy.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, and then you keep doing, going back and forth with things. And, I don't know, time, besides just the general truncated schedule, time was never that much of an issue. Like, it was, I don't know, I was fast enough at the writing and we kind of knew what we were doing. So I'm sure that it could become a problem someday, but it wasn't too much on this one.
Well, obviously you were right about everything, because the movie did extremely well in the theater. The critics liked it. The viewers liked it. Box office liked it. So congrats on all that working really well. And now I do have to make an admission here. I haven't seen the film. I'd like to see the film. And it's my understanding that by the time this episode drops, it's going to be available on demand. Do I get to watch it then?
Yes. Yes. On the 30th of July, you will be able to watch it then.
What's next for you? Do you have anything you're working on that you can talk about?
Yeah. Yeah. Next is a film called The Death of Robin Hood, with Hugh Jackman and Jodie Comer. And that was a script that I wrote. It was sort of a deal I made with myself when I was in the process of getting the Quiet Place gig. I sort of said, okay, if I'm going to go do the big studio movie, which I was very wary of, I want to make sure I have my own kind of personal smaller project in the wings that I can fall back on or just sort of have there. And so I wrote that script right before Quiet Place and have just kind of been working on it, tinkering in the background. And then, you know, I'm working with just some great producers, and we've just been kind of starting to package it together. And we have a lot of it cast now, and we're going to go shoot it top of next year. So that'll be my next one. It's sort of right in between Pig level and Quiet Place level. I wanted to do something a little smaller, not quite as small as Pig. I mean, I loved Pig and it was the right size for what it was, but like, it would be nice to have a few more resources. I'm sort of doing a mid-range thing next, a mid-range Robin Hood movie.
And that sounds like a really interesting topic, and you've certainly got a hell of a cast lined up. So
I'm very excited.
Good luck to you on that. Do you know where you're going to be shooting that?
It's looking like I'm actually going to scout Germany next month. So it's looking like we might shoot in Germany, possibly with some other spots as well. But it looks like the core of it might be in Germany.
Wow, that's exciting.
We're not 100% sure. We're going to scout to see if it works there. And if it doesn't, then we'll figure out other stuff. But at the moment, that's what we're talking about.
Well, I really appreciate you spending this time with us today. And I hope one of these days, maybe after your first Oscar win, could you maybe come back and talk to us again? Because there's an Oscar win coming for you.
It's not a goal. It would certainly be nice, but I don't think I can live my life planning for that.
Oh, no. I think it's a terrible goal. I think it's a nice thing when it happens. And I have a feeling you're not going to be able to avoid it. So, yes. So protect your unique voice along the way, please.
I think I have to for my own sanity.
That sounds right to me, too.
Thank you, Michael. And if you were in Sam's position on that day of the apocalypse, where are you going for pizza? If I'm in New York, where am I going for pizza?
I mean, I don't think it would keep quite as well, but I would probably be going for some sushi. I lived in New York for a little over a year editing the movie, and I fell in love with some sushi joints there. Although pizza's pretty classic. I really liked Scar's Pizza, if you haven't been there.
Scar's Pizza.
I haven't been.
Heard it here Scar's first, everybody.
But Patsy's is amazing, too. Patsy's is wonderful. Real place. Patsy's I ate too. There a lot. Okay. It's very good.
Oh, I love a good coal-fired place.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
Enjoy the Galapagos.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.
You too, Michael. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All the way from the Galapagos Islands. Very cool. I was really fascinated hearing his approach to the story for A Quiet Place Day One. And I admit that when I heard he was going to be involved in that movie, I was initially really surprised. I couldn't picture how the writer-director of Pig was going to fit into writing for that universe. But the description he gives of how he made it happen and what his specific vision was, it sounds terrific. As I said, I haven't seen the movie yet, but by the time our audience is hearing this episode, it'll be available for home viewing, and I will absolutely be watching it.
One of my favorite things that he said is I love how the protagonist's goal, Sam, was just so simple. I just wanted her to get a good slice of pizza on her last day of Earth. That's really it. She just wants to find the best slice of pizza in New York before she dies. I mean, isn't that not so universal?
Yes.
But so simple.
And given Michael's interesting way of looking at things, it really makes a lot of sense to me that he said, well, we've got a survival situation here, so why don't we put front and center someone who doesn't care about surviving? Brilliant. That's crafty.
Exactly.
That's crafty.
Yeah.
I hope our audience is also going to be checking out A Quiet Place Day One. And in addition, I hope they're going to check out Pig. It is a fantastic film with an unusual voice. I didn't get into it super deeply while we were chatting with him, but I did ask him along the way if the tone of that film when finished matched the tone that he imagined when he was writing it. Mm-hmm. And I asked him that because I find the tone of the movie so interesting. It's right on the edge of maybe having a very different tone or vibe. It's hard to explain, but I feel like if you turn the knob just a little bit, that movie turns into a black comedy. And if you turn the knob a little differently, it's some sort of prestige drama. It's walking some sort of weird razor's edge of tone. It isn't quite this and it isn't quite that. And maybe that's why I love it so much. And maybe that's why you told me I was going to love it so much because it can't be readily put into a box. It is out there and different and brilliant. So thanks again, Bailey, for getting me to that film.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I had said to you, I'd be so interested to get my hands on this script.
Oh,
I'm just so curious of how he put that on the page.
If I thought of that, I could have asked him to email me a PDF, but something tells me he might not have.
So if anybody out there listening has a copy, please send it to Brian and I.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Me too. So I think if any writers out there just wants some fuel, you know, watch Pig, watch a Quiet Place. You'll really get a good understanding of a writer's voice and somebody who has their own distinct style and just keeps reminding you that your voice matters.
Totally agreed. And before we go, a final thanks to our guest for this episode, writer-director Michael Sarnowski. Thanks for making time for us, especially from a boat off the Galapagos Islands. And thanks as well to Story Summit for making this podcast possible. To meet other writers, turbocharge your craft, and learn about the career opportunities writers care about, it really doesn't get any better than the generous people at Story Summit. Please check them out now at storysummit.us. Thanks for listening, everyone. And until next time, keep writing. And if a career as a writer is your goal, well, you're going to hear a lot of no's. But don't give up, please, because all it takes is that one yes. I've been your host, Brian Landwehr. This episode produced by myself and Bailey Patterson with the support of David Paul Kirkpatrick of Story Summit.
I hope to be a writer myself someday.
Original music by Kenton Edwards.